Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to a special Daylight Savings edition of the Weekly Worldview. It's good to have everyone here. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And to start with, if you forgot to set your clocks back an hour, don't do that. Set it forward an hour. Isn't that right? Spring forward, yes. And so here we are. It's an hour earlier than we thought, but we're right on time. And I don't know if I should start with the war. It's an hour earlier. Well, it's an hour later on the clock, but it's an hour earlier that I woke up. So woke up at the crack of dawn this morning, and I'll explain a little bit about that later, because I usually don't do that. Not generally a morning person, but this morning I was for some strange reason. I'm not sure to start. Should I start with the war in Iran or Kristi? I think I'll start with Kristi Noem. Does anyone remember Kristi Noem before, during the COVID hysteria? Remember her stance against the whole COVID hysteria when she was the governor there in North Dakota, I think it was. Before whatever happened to her happened. And by the way, I'm one of the few people in the right-wing media who pointed out early on that something had happened to her. And I could tell by the way she looked because of what she had done to herself. But she was something of a hero to us right-wingers during the COVID hysteria. When she refused, she just refused to go along. And for a while, I thought maybe that was why the left would never forgive her. But then I saw a picture of her and I've been concerned ever since. And now she'll basically be a byword among women, at least Christian, decent women, for the rest of history. And I hope she goes home and starts acting like the all-American girl we thought she was before the Botox and the midlife crisis with the flak jacket, the helmet, and the cameras rolling and all of that. Let's just hope her husband puts his pants back on in that family. Yeah. Let's hope her husband puts the pants back on in that family and helps her out, because we wish the best for her. It's a sad thing to see. Now, we're in week two of America's response to the 47-year-old war that was declared on America and the West back in 1979 by the fanatical Iranian mullahs who took over Persia. That's right, Persia. I posted on Facebook, MEPA. Have you heard of MEPA? He asked. He's extremely attractive. Audio engineer. Well, you've heard of MAGA, right? Make America Great Again? MEPA is Make Iran Persia Again. That's sad. I posted that up on Facebook, and then I posted a quote from the first chapter of Ezra, and some people may have misunderstood that. And if you did, well, I'm not going to explain it. Anyway, here we are, still hoping for the fall of the Iranian regime and the installation of a godly regime there, although the odds are distinctly against that. And then now, Donald Trump appears to have put Cuba on the front burner. That's right. President Trump is predicting that Cuba will fall. I'm not sure if he's given us an exact date. People are speculating. The betting services online, where you can now bet on war and you can bet on anything now, which I don't know how good that is. It's certainly a signpost along the highway here. Yeah. But Cuba's, yeah, April, I think, is the odds-on favorite for the fall of the Cuban regime. And we have called out Donald Trump. And I think I have a story. Donald Trump, he's hoping, let me find the story on Iran. It's way down in the pile here, and now I'm moving it up to the front, which is which is always problematic, but I have to find it here. I have this pile of story here. Donald Trump said this past week that he said, quote, regarding Iran and the future governance thereof, Donald Trump said, quote, I guess the worst case would be we do this and then somebody takes over who is bad as the previous person. That could happen, unquote, said the guy who destroyed the regime of Iran. As if he has no clue as to what to do next, and I think that's because he has no clue as to what to do next. He doesn't understand that he's obligated. Instead, he says, quote, we'd like to see somebody in there that's going to bring it back for the people, unquote. Bring it back for the people? Okay. As if Iran had ever had anything resembling anything at all to do with anything to do with Western civilization. It simply hasn't. I mean, before the mullahs, they had a king. And then before that, well, I'm not really sure what they had before that. I think they had a king before him and then a king before him. And then you go all the way back to Ezra, I think. But Donald Trump thinks that Thomas Jefferson is just hiding under the... He's ready to emerge there. And Don, the odds are against that, Don. And you will be held responsible, Mr. Trump. But when it comes to Cuba, hey, at least he's got Marco Rubio ready to go. And people have kind of been joking about Marco Rubio taking over Cuba. I have no doubt in my mind that's absolutely what Marco Rubio wants to do. And that's what he should do, frankly, if America manages to facilitate the collapse of that communist criminal regime. And by the way, that also solves the whole Vance versus Rubio succession problem after 2028, because Marco will be busy administering Cuba. We hope. And so we're hoping for the rise of Persia into something godly and decent, and we're hoping for the collapse of Cuba so that Marco Rubio has something worthwhile.
To do. Good last time.
Persia was good last time?
Uh-huh.
Well, I think, it was either Cyrus or Darius. I always get those two confused, and I think most historians and scholars get them confused, too. Was it Darius who issued the order to rebuild Jerusalem? It was either Darius or Cyrus.
No, Cyrus,
okay.
That was Persia. Oh, yes.
Yeah, back when they were. The only reason I posted up Ezra 1 on my Facebook post was to indicate that the king of Persia at the time said he was going to build a house for the God who dwells in Jerusalem. He is God. That was in parentheses there. And so the king of Persia at one time knew the living God. And so that's what we're hoping for again, is that someone rises up in Persia. No thanks to Donald Trump or anyone at the State Department. But there you go. So let's see. Any more commentary on personalities and political? Oh, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's got at least one extra name. Yeah. She has authored a Supreme Court ruling all by herself. She authored the Supreme Court's unanimous ruling ordering federal appeals courts to defer to immigration judges when reviewing asylum decisions. Now, nobody knows what that means, what I just read, because everything they do at the Supreme Court is so convoluted. Not just the Supreme Court, every court. It's so convoluted that you don't even know what she wrote a ruling on. But she wrote a ruling. And so while no one can perfectly unwind what the ruling means or what I just said, she has proven that despite all evidence to the contrary, Ketanji Jackson Brown, I'm sorry, did I say Jackson Brown? That's Ketanji Brown Jackson has proven that she is able to read and write in complete sentences in the English language, despite all evidence to the contrary leading up to this point. Now, it's possible she just plugged the whole thing into AI and it churned it out for her. So we have to leave that as a possibility. But at this point, it appears that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson can read and write English, which is a major accomplishment. All right. Now, had a couple of headlines that caught my eye in my alternative right-wing news sources. The first headline reads, quote, teacher wins $650,000 settlement after refusing to use preferred pronouns, unquote. And everyone cheers. Yay! And then another headline, quote, Tennessee school board clears record of Christian teacher punished for refusing to read LGBTQ plus books to first graders, unquote. Yay! Says everybody. And so these, by the way, reason number 2022 and 2023 to get or keep your children out of the government schools because there's preferred pronouns there. And there are LGBTQ books. Not only are there LGBTQ plus books, there are teachers who will read those books to the kids. And these headlines, and I don't know if this is on purpose or if it's accidental or if it's just because the urinalists have been trained to urinalize and they don't really know what they're doing. But the media, even the right-wing media, accidentally or on purpose, seeks perpetually to clean up the mess seeping out of the government schools by printing stories that make you think somebody's winning. Look, hon, the schools have drawn the line at these fake pronouns and reading these LGBTQ plus dirty books to the kids in class. We're winning, hon. Look at that. Meanwhile, their children's minds are being molested daily by godless perverts who, if they don't cross these lines, walk right up to each new line. The line, by the way, keeps moving left and down. Get or keep your children out of the government schools, please. All right. Now, one more on the Iran war. Following the headlines this entire week, I have been checking the left-wing media, which is pretty much everything except the kook websites that I go to. And I've noticed that all of the major media, ABC, CBS, NBC, what are the other ones? Are there other ones? CNN, others, all of the traditional network-type news outlets are actively rooting against America in the 47-year-old war against Iran, in which America has finally struck a retaliatory blow. And this is precarious because going to war with a hostile press at home is, well, it's not unprecedented, as a matter of fact. We've done it before in Vietnam. Remember that one. The second Iraqi war, you remember that one. We just barely managed to escape there by the skin of our teeth after killing Saddam Hussein. And then there was Afghanistan, where the press actively rooted for America to lose the whole time. And in almost every case, America, in fact, lost. Because going to war with a hostile press is, well, it's virtually impossible. Because war is an inherently sinful activity. Even a just war executed by a nation that has been viciously attacked for 47 years on many fronts. Even a just retaliation is executed in a sinful fashion. You've probably heard that the first casualty of war is the truth. And that's true. So any leader who's going to war, he needs the press to help him tell the lies that are necessary to successfully prosecute the war. And Donald Trump does not have that. he doesn't have a media willing to help him with the necessary lies to carry out the sinful, just war against Iran. And I'm telling you, that bodes ill. Worldview. And I'm Doug McBurney. That's right. We're at war. And another headline I saw, another headline I saw related to the war. Here's the headline. Quote, watch 50 Israeli jets drop 100 bombs, obliterating Khamenei's secret bunker used by regime's top brass, unquote. Now, I didn't click on this because... Now, this is clickbait, because in a just war, the all-American, red-blooded American male, he wants to see the action against the enemy, because we're at war. But I didn't click this because I know that clicking this and watching 50 Israeli jets drop 100 bombs in the middle of a city, that's a sinful activity. For me to do that would be sinful. Because I'm just titillating my flesh with the killing of other human beings. Whether it's a just war or not, it's just not something I need in my head. And you don't either. We don't need this in our head any more than we needed to see the reporter's head chopped off back in 2002 by the maniacs. But I watched that. I wish I'd have never watched that. But you just don't need this. Anyway, war is an inherently sinful activity. Just like pretty much everything is a sinful activity, because we're all sinners and we're sinful. And even when you defend yourself justly against someone who has attacked you, you do it in a sinful manner. And the sooner you realize that almost everything you do is riddled and tainted by sin, well, the sooner you'll be turned toward the living God. And the only way we can be righteous is with him, because I got nothing. That's, like I said last week, I'm a weak Christian. All right. Now I don't even want to do this next story, because this seems gratuitous. But I'm going to do it because there's another point I want to make. All right. So, you're familiar with Nipsey Hussle, right? He asked. He's extremely attractive. You don't have all of Nipsey Hussle's records? He didn't have a lot of records. But Nipsey Hussle's, he was a rapper. Nipsey Hussle's estate, with the help of one Snoop Dogg, has opened a chain of fast food restaurants called Marathon Burger. And they opened the one there in Long Beach this past week. And the grand opening event, according to RVMnews.com, the opening event at Snoop Dogg's Nipsey Hussle Marathon Burger was disrupted by gunfire. Disrupted?
That's a ceremony.
Isn't that part of the opening ceremony at a Snoop Dogg Nipsey Hussle event? See why I say this is gratuitous? So anyway, but for a journalist to say that an event was disrupted by gunfire, that's an improper use of the word disrupted. Trust me, the people there, they were more than disrupted when they hit the ground freaking out. And of course, now, this disruption left multiple people shot and one person dead. So, to me, that's more of a disruption, but I'm not a journalist. I didn't go to journalism school. But the restaurant, we're reminded by RVMnews.com, is a chain founded by Hussle's estate and Snoop Dogg. Now, that's right, Nipsey Hussle, who was himself disrupted by gunfire. His career, that is, and his life, while he was making a living about disruptive gunfire. That's how Nipsey made his living, ironically enough, and then he was disrupted. And the point I want to make about this is that I was walking through the grocery store sometime over the last week or two, and I saw Snoop Dogg has a vodka. Snoop Dogg has a branded vodka called 19 Sins. And I looked at that and I thought, now there is a barometer of where we are in America, that first of all, that Snoop Dogg can be a pitchman for anything, even vodka. But then to call it 19 Sins, and then, so I'm sorry, folks. Snoop Dogg and Kid Rock are not qualified to become the elder statesmen of pitchmen and political rah-rah in America. I'm sorry. For all you in the 90s generation who thought Snoop Dogg could be the grandfatherly type and Kid Rock could be the next conservative pitchman for MAGA sheets and pillows or whatever it is, I'm sorry, this does not work. They can't be. No. I mean, hey, no one ever got shot when Frank Sinatra was at a restaurant opening. As bad as, and Frank Sinatra was with the mafia, for crying out loud. All right. So, no, I'm sorry. Snoop Dogg and Kid Rock, no. That's not going to be allowed. It's not going to work. This is not America. All right. Let's see. My pillow guy. Did the My Pillow guy make it in there? Oh, the sheets and the pillow. Has he done a commercial with Kid Rock yet? The My Pillow guy? The guy with the cross. He always he buttons his shirt up all the way to the top, does the My Pillow guy, but then he hangs a cross out the top. Which that's not normal.
Kind of like Laura Ingram.
Oh, yeah, well, but Laura Ingram, well, let's not even go there. Let's leave Laura Ingram aside, speaking of Botox, midlife crises. All right. Anyway. Let's go now to the drinking habits of the founding fathers. So the justice system is debating this week whether or not potheads should be allowed to have guns. And so I just want to stop and point out that Bob Enyart was a prophet. Bob Enyart predicted in the 90s that if we didn't get off this train, if we didn't get off this train barreling down the rails on the highway to hell, that we would one day be debating free dental care for perverts. And then that happened in around 2010, and the perverts got the dental care. The debate happened, the perverts won, in the free dental care for all perverts was written into the Affordable Care Act around 2010. And now, supposedly serious people in the Supreme Court, these are people who went to law school, they're debating gun rights for potheads. Whether or not people who smoke marijuana should be allowed to have guns. Note to the Supreme Court, people who smoke marijuana shouldn't be allowed to have marijuana. I mean, are you people at the Supreme Court smoking marijuana? This is just unbelievable. Anyway, but the debate is going on, and I don't know that I want to talk about it at all, except that one of the justices discussed the past standards in America for a habitual drunkard. There were laws in the colonies for to being a habitual drunkard, and according to Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court justice, according to the American Temperance Society, back in the colonial days, a habitual drunkard has 8 shots of whiskey a day. Oh, no, that made you an occasional drunkard. Sorry. That's right. And according to the American Temperance Society, if you had double that, meaning 16 shots of whiskey a day, that would make you what they called, what did I say?
Habitual.
A habitual drunkard. And then he goes on to talk about how much the founding fathers drank, which is, that's not really that surprising, I suppose. But he said they would have been called habitual drunkards, although I don't think any of them drank 16 shots a day or even 8 shots a day. John Adams had hard cider with his breakfast every morning. Okay. Madison drank a pint of whiskey every day. Jefferson didn't use much alcohol. He only had 3 or 4 glasses of wine with dinner each night. Yeah, anyway, none of that seems all that serious to me. And anyway, the thing is alcohol is a lot different than marijuana. Although, you know what? It probably would have been better for us to take the guns away from everybody a long time ago. Because alcohol probably does lead to as many psychological, it definitely leads to more killings than marijuana. But marijuana leads to psychosis. And so anyway, let's take away the marijuana and lay off the booze. And then it'd be nice if we lived in a country where we didn't even need to have guns. That would be great. That'll be one of the nice things about heaven. Nobody's going to be arguing about the Second Amendment or self-defense. We're not going to have to worry about any of that. It's going to be great. All right. And you won't need a hard cider with breakfast just to get yourself through the day, or 4 glasses of wine just to deal with the company. No, you'll be fine. It'll be great. Okay, now let's go to California in the Burning Down Paradise file, where we check in with the San Diego Padres, who thought they had secured Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Merrill Kelly. They offered him $40 million for 2 years of pitching services there in San Diego. Now, the Diamondbacks were offering him $40 million, but they wanted him to work for them for 3 years. So on the face of it, the San Diego Padres offered the Diamondback pitcher a better deal. But the pitcher took the Arizona deal. The reason? California's taxes. He would make more money in 3 years playing for the Diamondbacks. So that's, I don't know how many millions of dollars the difference had to be, but he had to sit down with his accountant and say, I just can't believe this. I'm going to have to sit here in the sweltering heat of Phoenix, Arizona, instead of being able to go to San Diego because of the money. I don't know. I don't know how many millions of dollars it would take to lure me out of Arizona to San Diego. Not that much. The article goes on to say, this is Jonathan Turley, by the way, who's a left-wing lawyer, who's suddenly, he's like Kid Rock of the, yeah, he's been a leftist lawyer his entire career. He says one friendly thing about Donald Trump and populism and something about not liking high tax rates, and now Jonathan Turley is some sort of conservative. Anyway, Turley does note accurately, I'm sure, that California has a 13% state income tax rate on income above $1 million. So, well, that doesn't even take into account the fact that they have like a 10 or 12% rate on everything else for anybody making any money. But the San Diego Padres have lost out to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Represented by a snake, by the way. The Padres are represented by a minister of the gospel. Or at least, you know, oh, he's a Padre. So, okay. What the team giveth, the state taketh away, says Jonathan Turley. And that's fairly witty, but Turley's still a leftist. And the San Diego Padres, they're destined to dwell in the basement of everything forever. And that's just the way it is. And the California tax laws don't help in any way. By the way, did anybody see the interview with Gavin Newsom and the girl from the Today Show whose name escapes me? But we used to watch her all the time. Katie Couric. Katie Couric did an interview with Gavin Newsom. Hands down, the most embarrassing moment between two adult human beings that's ever been recorded on videotape. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable for her, but even worse for him, and most of all for all of us. For anyone who had to watch it, it qualifies you probably for some sort of government assistance program for mental health, or a couple, it's a hard cider in the morning, or four glasses of wine before Katie Couric comes on.
Words, weapons, sharpened knives, makes you want to have the other die.
It's the Weekly Worldview. Yes. So I was just made aware of the contents of the Katie Couric interview. I didn't get to that part. I only saw the clip where she gushed about how good looking he was. I was not aware that she disagreed with him on the tax rates there in California. I didn't make it past the whole gushing part. I had to go to the vomitorium to recover from that. I wasn't able to. Plus, I got stung by a bee. So I've been, I think one of the reasons I woke up so early this morning is because I got stung by a bee yesterday. And I don't think I've been stung by a bee since I was 8. I don't think. I can't recall being stung by a bee since then. But I distinctly remember when I was stung by a bee when I was 8. And if you ever want to see a 50-something-year-old grown man hop around like an 8-year-old, have a bee sting him on the ear, which happened to me yesterday. And I felt like I was 8 again. I had to run inside to my mommy and cry. And the only difference between getting stung by a bee at 50-something and getting stung when you're 8 is when you're 8, you actually cry and blubber. But everything else is the same. The disorientation, the freaking out, the reaching out desperately for help of any human being who, and fortunately, I was in the care of my extremely attractive audio engineer and others here at the McBurney compound, and they removed the pulsating stinger from my ear while it was pumping poison into the side of my head. It's a honeybee. My neighbor has honeybees, and they've generally been friendly, and some of them are, they seem to be, how would you say it, politically correct? We have, like, special needs honeybees next door. they come over to our house, and they lollygag around and die in the yard, and we don't know what's going on with the honey. They're sad. The owner has them there, and he never visits them and doesn't talk to them, and so they're sad, And but yesterday, one of them was mad at me, and he stung me in the ear, which is not the best place to be stung, although there's not a good place to be stung by a bee. But he stung me right in the ear, and I think that's why I woke up so early this morning. So yesterday, for most of the day, it felt like someone took an ice pick and heated it up with a blowtorch and then stabbed it into the side of my head. That's what my head felt like for most of the day yesterday. And then in the middle of the night last night, it started itching. It started itching and itching, and it woke me up, and then I tossed and turned, and if I don't know, 5:30 this morning, I was just like, okay, I got to get up. So, and what's odd is that when you touch the area around the sting, it's all numb. It feels numb when you touch it, but then it itches, which is something of a dichotomy. But anyway, I have a feeling that the bee's venom is probably somehow good for you a little bit every once in a while. So maybe having 50 years in between bee stings, maybe that's not such a good idea. I need to get out there among the wildlife a little bit more. All right. So now I don't want to do this story because I just can't do that. We have let's stick with politics, lighter fare, right? It's from the politics file. Marjorie Taylor Greene posted a Twitter post against Donald Trump because Donald Trump came out and said that he was against transing children without the expressed written consent of the parents. And that made Marjorie Taylor Greene angry. Because she said, the House passed my bill to protect you. She's not black, is she?
No.
She's white. I can't do like a middle-aged white girl southern accent, I don't think. I'll try. The House passed my bill Protect Children's Innocence Act that makes it a felony to trans any child under 18, Mr. President. And she says to do this, and now she says, Mr. President, you've crossed all my lines. That's all. So they're not getting along anymore. She goes on in the I don't use that. It's Twitter, darn it. I'm not going to use that, no matter what Elon Musk says. She goes on in the Twitter post to say, to do this to a child is absolutely disgusting. Children must be protected. Did I tell you that the House passed my Protect Children's Innocence Act, Mr. President? And so here's the problem. Both sides are working for the devil. Marjorie Taylor Greene seems to be okay with tolerating transgender insanity among adults, which that shouldn't be allowed. I can assure you that no amount of hard cider in the morning or wine after dinner would have convinced the founding fathers to tolerate transgenderism among anyone, ever. Which makes me think these people are all smoking marijuana. Although Donald Trump is supposedly a teetotaler. He doesn't drink any alcohol or smoke any marijuana. And I don't know about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Is that her name? MTG? Marjorie Taylor. I don't know about her. I don't know if she smokes dope or drinks, but if they're both sober and they actually think it's okay for adults to participate in transgenderism, well, then they're without excuse. That's all. At least if they were drunk, you could say, well, you know, they were drinking at the time. But no. They think it's only bad for kids because they're obviously out of their minds. Meanwhile, let's hear some good news. This is from the Good Politics File. We have a story from Representative Karen Whitsitt, who is a Michigan Democrat, a member of the Michigan Democratic Party. And I don't know if she held an office or not, but she was somehow convinced to join the Democrat Party and run for office. And she just issued a statement this past week. She says, I will not be seeking re-election for this office. Okay, so she was elected. And she says she's not going to run for re-election. She says, I will not be running for any office ever again. This is not a political calculation, says Karen Whitsitt. It's a spiritual decision. I cannot reconcile with Scripture the issues of abortion, the gay lifestyle, and the redefinition of gender, she said. She goes on, quote, I understand these are personal for many families because your son, daughter, cousin, aunt, uncle may be one. But personal proximity does not change God's definition of right and wrong. Love for people does not require agreement with sin. And compassion does not give us permission to rewrite Scripture. Hallelujah, praise the Lord. Can I get an amen? I'm sorry. I thought I was listening to a sermon there. This is a politician resigning from American politics because she can't take it anymore. She goes on, quote, I'm not going to pretend God's word can be twisted by any priest, bishop, pastor, or preacher to make people comfortable with sin. My allegiance is to Jesus Christ, and I'm choosing God's business over man's approval, unquote. And then the reporters at the Daily Signal, which is an alt-right news outlet, they note that Whitsitt has not joined the Republican Party. Yeah, no kidding. Which proves that she is in her right mind. So anyway, we hope she goes home and gets married and rears children and guides the house as Paul instructed in 2 Timothy. I don't know how old she is, or I don't know if she's married, single, or, but she's obviously one of the few people on the planet in her right mind. And we appreciate hearing from her. Praise the Lord. All right. Now, meanwhile, do I want to do any of these stories about death and murder? I'm having a hard time. Let me go to James Tallarico. I watched the elections that occurred this past week, and I watched all my alt-right news sources, and I went to CNN and the other ABC, NBC, CBS. and all the others, and watched as the reportage came in on the election. And the one thing I noticed was all the gloating about the defeat of left-wing Representative Jasmine Crockett in Texas. Jasmine Crockett has been a favorite target of sane people because she's out of her mind. And this, a never-ending source of bad information has been Jasmine Crockett. She's evil, demonic, leftist, Marxist, communist, socialist. She may have been created in a petri dish by George Soros and Hillary Clinton. That's how evil she is. And so there's been a lot of gloating about her defeat at the hands of one James Tallarico, who claims to be a Christian pastor. He's also a demonic, left-wing, insane, Marxist, baby-killing, homo freak, trans, you name it. I reported on Tallarico last, November of 2024, when he first came on the political scene and was elected there in Texas by a bunch of numbskulls who bought into the idea that he was a pastor. Anyway, James Tallarico, you shouldn't be gloating, because at least with Jasmine Crockett, we were at the advantage that she's a complete idiot. Tallarico, on the other hand, is a devious mastermind, evil, criminally insane. I'd rather have neither one of them. But anyway, for all of you gloating over the victory of James Tallarico, just go back and listen to my show from November of 24 when I warned you about this guy. He's the ultimate wolf in sheep's clothing. And the fact that he could pass himself off as a Christian pastor in Texas tells you that the end is near. It just can't go on much longer if something like that can actually pass muster. It's just not possible. All right. Now, here's an interesting story that I'm sure you've heard about. I only started following this, although I have heard about it. News Nation reports that Aaron Spencer comfortably won the Republican primary in Lone Oak County, Arkansas. He defeated the incumbent sheriff there. He was running for sheriff. And he's now running to be the sheriff there in, I've already said that, Lone Oak County, Arkansas. That is, if he's not convicted and thrown in prison, his trial is expected to get underway later this year. And you ask, why is he on trial? The guy running for sheriff is going to go on trial? That's right. He's going on trial for second-degree murder. He's accused of fatally shooting Michael Fosler, a 67-year-old pervert, after Spencer, the sheriff's candidate, pursued Fosler and found his missing 13-year-old daughter with the 67-year-old pervert and shot the pervert to death. The pervert was out on bond awaiting trial for having abused the daughter that he had with him when the father shot the bastard. So now Spencer, the sheriff's candidate there, has emerged as a sort of folk hero. So a lot of people, they read the story and they're like, well, so this pervert gets out on bail, goes after the guy's daughter, who no doubt he lured and seduced the girl somehow earlier, and that's why he's on trial. Now he lures and seduces the girl again. Dad catches him with her and kills the guy. And so people like me on the right are, that's a justified killing. If you catch a 67-year-old pervert who was already on trial for either molesting or trying to molest your daughter, you catch her with him and you kill the guy, that's justified. But prosecutors say he should have contacted police, which apparently he had already done before the previous trial or before the previous charges, and the justice system let the guy out. So it seems like Dad was at the end of his rope. He had already called the police, and the guy had been arrested and all of that, and then the guy's out and catch him anyway. They say he took the law into his own hands, is what the prosecutors allege. And so I don't know all the details of the story. I'm not here to render judgments, but on its face, this appears to be a justified killing of a pervert by a father who, he didn't take the law into his own hands. He took his daughter out of the hands of a pervert, which you are allowed to do with extreme prejudice, up to and including deadly force, which the father used against the pervert. But here's the thing. Aaron Spencer, in killing the guy who had kidnapped, lured, seduced, whatever happened there, I don't know all the details, but a 67-year-old should not be with a 13-year-old, especially since he's already going on trial for all of that. But Aaron Spencer, in justifiably killing the pervert, sinned. It was a sinful act. And so while we can present this as a justifiable killing, we should not present it as something good because it was not good. And as much as I have to restrain myself from standing up and cheering for dad for killing the pervert and getting his daughter out of his hands, I have to restrain myself and I have to remember that even when we defend ourselves justly against the wicked, we do it in a sinful manner because we're all fallen. And so we need to refrain from celebrating any kind of killing. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Yes, that's... So we need to keep that in mind. That's all. It's anyway, it'll be interesting to see if Aaron Spencer is elected sheriff. So I predict he will not be convicted of second-degree murder. Well, he's in Arkansas, and in Texas, they've elected, well, Jasmine Crockett and James Tallarico. So who knows? But anyway, just keep that in mind about the about your own sinfulness and your tendency to be sinful, and the fact that you need God. That's all. God has to do it for us. The righteousness part, we can't. Even our most righteous behavior is sinful. Okay, so I don't want to dwell on all that, but keep it in mind. Meanwhile, we have in Texas a Republican member of the Texas State Board of Education, who is a Christian pastor, gave a speech in defiance of the Council on American Islamic Relations, saying that he is not accepting of the jihadist agenda being forced on our children. He said, "I am against," quote, "the jihadist agenda being forced on our children," unquote. And then he interrogated a member of CARE during this school board meeting, State Board of Education meeting. And so, what's his name? Brandon Hall. Yeah, Brandon, you're a father, you're a Christian pastor. Nobody's forcing any of this on your children. You're the one forcing it on your children by putting them in the government schools. This is reason number 2024 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, because even the Christian pastors in Texas don't understand that you just don't have to do this. You don't have to force any, you don't have to allow any of this to be forced on your kids. It's all on you. And the founding fathers, there wasn't enough hard cider or whiskey or wine to make the founding fathers agree to submitting their children to anything having anything at all to do with anything to do with Mohammed or Sharia. It was illegal for Muslims to immigrate to America. It was illegal. Because the founding fathers, drunk or sober, they knew that you couldn't have that. All right. Now, meanwhile, speaking of the war and the truth, this is an interesting story on all of that from the Make Iran Persia Again file, the MEPA file. Steve Witkoff, you'll remember, was President Donald Trump's special envoy for Middle East talks, who was involved with talks with the Iranians right up until the bombs started falling on said Iranians. We don't know if anyone who was in talks with Mr. Witkoff is still alive. But he is, so he left, apparently. I don't know if he was there or... But he got out of town, and the talks didn't go well, we can deduce. He says that when he went in to negotiate with the Iranians, he said the Iranian negotiators opened, their opening negotiating position was to declare, number one, their undeniable right to enrich all of their nuclear fuel, and number two, he said, they said directly with no shame that they controlled enough enriched uranium to make 11 nuclear bombs. He said that was their opening gambit. Their opening position was, you better watch out. We have enough uranium to make 11 bombs. At which point, Witkoff is texting Trump from under the table going, you know, we need to start bombing like in 15 minutes. Anyway, so this is what Witkoff says. This is what Witkoff says they said. He says that was their opening line. They led with it. They were proud that they had evaded all the oversight protocols that were put in place by Barack Obama and the nuclear deal and all of that stuff. And Witkoff went on further. This was an interview that Witkoff gave to Fox News. Fox News. Is Mike Levin on Fox News? I was doing the other guy. He hasn't been on Fox News in a long time. I can't remember where he went. Yeah, he was somebody's son. He was a reporter's son. Yeah, Mike Wallace's son, Chris Wallace, Fox News. Anyway, the interview there at Fox News, Steve Witkoff said... He also said that the U.S. team offered Iran free nuclear fuel indefinitely if they would disassemble their nuclear program. And so this story comes out through Fox News because they're the only Trump-friendly media organization outside of all of the alt-right websites on the internet that I go to. And... all of the other news websites and networks, they question whether or not Witkoff is telling the truth. And so here, as I sit here, I support the idea of killing the mullahs who took over Persia. I support that. I think that we needed to do that about 47 years ago. So I'm all for that. But is Steve Witkoff telling the truth? Well, I hope he is, but I don't know, because in war, the first casualty is the truth, and you need people to tell the necessary lies to enable the war, because war is an inherently sinful behavior. And so, I don't know, history will tell, I suppose, if Steve Witkoff is telling the truth. Maybe there's recordings, maybe he turned on iRecord on his iPhone and he'll actually be able to prove that that's what they said. But we don't know. And you know what? If he is lying, well, I know why he's lying and I understand the necessity of those lies because there's a war. Now, I'm not going to say it's not sinful, But I do comprehend why he would be telling those lies, because war requires a massive amount of lies and steel. Those are the two things that govern who wins a war. The production of steel is number one, and the production of lies is number two. All right. Meanwhile, the United States has tested a Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile off the coast of California just this past week. According to the government, who may or may not be telling us the truth because there's a war going on. Okay. But we're all adults, okay? So you don't have to become a whining, sniveling, millennial basket of nerves over, yes, there's people telling lies. There's a war going on, you stupid kid. Shut up. Anyway, according to the government, the Minuteman III missile traveled thousands of miles across the Pacific, striking its designated target near Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands, if you believe any of all of that is true. They say it did it in 22 minutes. I tend to believe that this is probably true. The Pentagon insists that the test was routine. It was planned years in advance. But according to reporters, the timing could hardly be more sobering. Indeed. And then they cite the Ukraine war that they say has been going on for 4 years, but it hasn't. It's been going on for 16 years. I'm sorry, 12 years. Yeah, was it 2014 that NATO overthrew Putin's man in Kiev? I believe it was. That's right. Then they cite the entire region. Millions have fled their homes, Russia, Ukraine, the Middle East. All right. So, shockingly enough, we have a Minuteman missile that still works after Clinton, Obama. Was there another communist in there? Oh, yeah. Clinton, Obama, Biden. I'm shocked we have a... In fact, I tend to believe maybe this is not true, because it would shock me that any of our intercontinental ballistic missiles even still work after all that. Meanwhile, in what could turn out to be the most significant development related to the war in Iran, the United States government has stepped in to offer insurance to oil tankers going through the Straits of Hormuz. The Strait of Hormuz, I'm sorry. It's not plural. It's one strait. That's right. And I didn't know this, but since roughly the 1600s, the English, Lloyd's of London in England, has controlled insurance, maritime insurance in the Gulf area. And it's been a significant source of income for the British monarchy. And Lloyd's of London, which, if I'm not mistaken, is an arm of the British monarchy. I'd have to look that up, but if they're not, well, they are. Okay, let's just... And so Donald Trump steps in because Lloyd's of London peeps up and says, we're not going to be able to insure these people. And Trump says, okay, well, then I will. And then Lloyd's of London is like, whoa, 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 wait a second, wait, we didn't quite mean that. What we're saying is the anything but that. So the faggots and the feminists there in England, they're just knee-jerk anti-Trump, so they forced the bozos at Lloyd's of London to say, well, we're not going to be able to insure because this guy, Donald Trump. And so Trump says, okay, well, we'll insure them. And then Lloyd's of London realizes they're about to lose a $1 billion industry to a guy who built tenements in Queens. They're going to, right? 400 years of British tradition taken over by a tenement guy in Queens. Anyway, there's a signpost on the... Okay, so Trump says the U.S. Development Finance Corporation will provide political risk insurance and guarantees for shipping of all nations through the Gulf. And he says, we'll do it at a very reasonable price. Very reasonable. Just like the tenement in Queens. I can get you into it at a very reasonable price. And the guys at Lloyd's of London are absolutely apoplectic. They say, well, no, what's happening is that a certain of our underwriters have balked and refused, and rates have gone up, and Donald Trump's just like, okay, well, we'll do it. We're the United States of America. You think we can't insure shipping through the Gulf? Not only can we give you political insurance financially, we can also put the ships there to blow the enemy out of the water who's threatening your ships. So how about that, Miss Admiral and Prince King, whatever you are there. Yeah. So anyway, spot rates for insurance through the Gulf had peaked at about $700,000 a day. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened to the Weekly Worldview for any amount of time, you know that I believe that insurance is a total racket. I only carry the insurance that I'm forced to carry because I just know it's a racket. Anything you're paying into that plans to make money after they pay off everybody if something goes bad, I'm sorry. It's, at the very least, it's not in your favor, okay? But $700,000 a day to drive a ship through the Gulf? Well, there's got to be an opportunity for a hardworking entrepreneur like Donald Trump in a situation like that. I mean, anyway. All right, so there you have it. The tenement construction guy from Queens outsmarts 400 years of British tradition. And all right, and then, so let's close on this, ladies and gentlemen. Since we opened it up talking about Kristi Noem and then the Jasmine Crockett, and then we had the breath of fresh air from the girl in Michigan or whatever she's going back to church. She's getting out of politics, going back to church, hopefully go find a husband, have some kids. So since it's been a feminist-oriented show, we'll close with a story from John Nolte on Breitbart. John Nolte is a populist. He is a godless populist libertarian, which would be appropriate for Breitbart. And I read him a lot because he's not insane. But he's reporting on a new poll that says 79% of Democrat women say they want socialism instead of capitalism. And now almost 40% of Americans polled say that they want socialism instead of capitalism. And listen to how Nolte presents that. He says, well, he presents one aspect of the poll. 49% of registered voters polled say that capitalism is not working. And then Nolte goes on, quote, "And I'll bet they say that on a $1,000 iPhone after pausing Netflix on a 65-inch TV while awaiting their DoorDash order," unquote. As they say, capitalism is not working. Nolte goes on to say, "Capitalism has been an unqualified success, and socialism has never worked." Okay, so listen to me, John Nolte. To say that capitalism has been an unqualified success is laid bare as untrue by the fact that half the people want socialism. That proves that capitalism has not been an unqualified success. At best, it's a qualified success. Okay? And here's the thing, John. The fact that you have a $1,000 iPhone and a 65-inch TV and you can do a DoorDash order while you're watching Netflix and then you're still unhappy proves that capitalism is not the solution. And the fact that socialism has never worked, that's not the problem with socialism, Mr. Nolte. This is the problem, folks. Both sides are working for the devil and one side doesn't know it, which... that's how the devil works. That's right. The devil works by getting you to work for him without you even knowing you're working for him, which is what John Nolte is doing. The problem with socialism is it violates thou shalt not steal from the Bible and the righteous God. And the problem with capitalism is that it's only about money and earthly things, and it doesn't take into account the heavenly and the fact that we're all sinful and that we all need God for any righteousness at all. And I hope John Nolte finds that somehow, someday. If send him a link to this show, maybe we can help. That's what we're here to do. We are the Weekly Worldview. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And until next time, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.